All right, welcome everyone. Welcome to the War Room. Tonight we are joined by my friend and colleague, Michael. Michael is he's been working with Before You Act for quite a long time. I was just talking to Dr. Katz about that. And I just know Michael through advocacy. And he's come on to talk to us about how to find a good therapist because that's really hard for people in a country where all 50 states have required mandated reporting. Okay, how do we make him go up there where Mr. Katz is right now, Dr. Katz is right now, Chuck? I'm trying to find a little button that says like pin him to the thing or are you unmuted, Michael?
Yes.
Okay, there we go. All right, so I think if you just start talking, you'll stay in the middle and then it's all good.
Okay, and if I can I share?
Let me make sure you're set for sharing. Oh, that has to be a Chuck thing. Chuck, can you set the share thing so that he can?
I think we're good.
There we go.
Okay, so I work with NARSOL for one thing, but I run the Indiana affiliate of that, and so And I myself am a person's required to register. So I came upon Before You Act after a number of years of working in advocacy because I'm also a minor attracted person and had looked basically in my entire life for therapy and could never find anybody that was able to provide the kind of therapy that I felt I needed and be unjudgmental. And so as a result, I ended up committing an offense. I guess it's not, you can't blame that entirely on not finding therapy, but anyway, the result was that I eventually committed an offense and then was required to take over 600 hours of mandated therapy, probably actually closer to 800 hours of mandated therapy, none of which was really very effective in helping me to get to a point of feeling like I was not able to control my urges, but not feeling like I was kind of not the scum of the earth or whatever, or dealing with my other issues. So as a result, finding Before You Act helped me to, well, I came in at a point when actually beginning to create as part of a workshop some guidelines for therapy. And that led me then into a position of being able to actually help create a therapist referral service specifically for minor attracted people, and which I've been managing and maintaining along with my colleague Richard from Before You Act since its inception. So I think I have a little bit of a handle on what provides effective therapy and what doesn't. I've kind of geared this talk to speak about therapy in general in the first part of it, and then go into more of what Before You Act does, and I will try not to take too much time so that we can open up for questions after that. So anyway, what is effective therapy? I guess I've told you a little bit about me. I'd like you to consider a couple of these statements. One of them is that 50 to 65% of child sexual abuse occurs in the absence of pedophilic interests. So, that's kind of interesting when we think about it. And I don't like to make distinctions between the people we serve as a group who is trying to serve the community of registrants, but I think there is sort of a distinction in that the people that commit sexual offenses for purely sexual purposes are somewhat distinct from those who commit them for emotional purposes. In fact, I was asked by a therapist, one of the good things I was asked by a therapist and part of my mandated therapy was what percentage of your offense was sexually motivated? And I had to say that 80% of it was emotionally motivated. I really felt emotionally drawn to the person that I committed my offense against. And I think that from the people that I have met that are within this movement, I would say that a good majority of people would fall into a similar category where a good share of their motivation towards an offense was emotional rather than simply gratifying sexual desires. So So that's basically what I just said. Do you agree with that statement or not? Most people who have committed a sexual offense do not want to reoffend. I don't believe. I believe that it was something that happened for a number of different reasons that most of us have moved beyond, and that we're really not motivated to reoffend. And I think that's backed up by the statistics. I know in Indiana, the reoffense rate is like 1.05%. And I think we find that pretty much consistent across the country. Another statistic that I think is interesting. Statistic that I think is interesting to consider is that juvenile predators account for more than 25% of all sexual offenses, over one third of such offenses are committed against victims under 18. So we do have a large share of juveniles who are struggling with their sexual identity and sexual behavior, and that are part of committing offenses. And so, do we really want to lock these kids up for long periods of time and submit them to the kind of therapy that is most generally offered through the carceral program? So, is the kind of therapy that's offered good therapy? My opinion that most of it's not. So what do you think about this statement? This statement was made to me by a therapist that we interviewed for our Before You Act referral list. Said that we serve the needs of, he said MAPs, because that's what we were talking about, but I put in there sex offenders. We've served the need of sex offenders based on a foundation of prevention. So, if you have any comments about that, maybe you can type them into the chat and see whether you agree, disagree with that statement or what?
Are we talking about the therapists that you like the therapist that you're required to go see? Is that what you're talking about?
If the therapist said this, would you feel like that was a therapist that you would want to see?
I mean, prevention seems like a good idea, but I don't know that. I don't know anything about therapies. Don't ask me.
Well, I have a problem with the statement based on the word prevention. I call it the P word. It's one of my least favorite words. So, what's the meaning of prevention? It's to act in preventing or hindering, Webster's definition, to keep from happening or existing, prevent war, to hinder, to stop. So what's wrong with that? Well, I think there's a paradigm shift that has to be had, because if I'm sitting in front of a therapist who's wanting to prevent me from doing something, am I really their client, or is society as a whole more their client? Obviously, I think I have no problem with wanting to end abuse. That's not the problem. The problem is that if I'm seeking therapy, I want the therapist to be on the page of helping me to become what I want to become, and not worried about society on a broader picture,
And certainly, in Missouri at least, if you look up the mission of the organization that provides the treatment, it is they are not serving clients. They say right out loud that they're serving the state.
Well, in Indiana, the name of the program is the Sex Offender Management and Maintenance Program. It says nothing about therapy. It's managing and maintaining, and I'll get into that a little bit here in the end. So, here are some of the voices of people from who are seeking therapy from the research. I envision a future where I'm suddenly discovered and people search their memories for when I might have been alone with a child, any child. Telling anyone, even a therapist, feels like a near impossibility given these risks. Another statement made, I made an appointment with the first therapist available and he made me feel like shit. If I ever have felt genuinely suicidal and in a contemplative sense, it would have been then. He just had no conception or concept that I might be wanting help. It was all just about what a threat I was to children and about how my feelings were wrong, sick, and I had to stop having them. And see, I think these are the kind of statements that we get into when the focus of the therapist is a prevention mind. And that's why I have a problem with it. After many years, I confided in my therapist about my attraction to kids. After his assurances, he would not report me. So, of course, reporting is another big problem. Think, strong people don't put other people down, they lift them up, right? And to make a difference in someone's life, you don't have to be brilliant, rich, beautiful, or perfect. You just have to care. And, again, I think that caring element loses its trajectory when we're prevention focused. Now, this is a statement that was made by a woman who was a teacher when I have an undergraduate degree in social work, and I thought she was totally nuts when I heard the statement, but over the years it's made more sense to me. She said, if you're counseling a woman of ill repute, your job is not to change her, but to make her the best woman of ill repute she can possibly be. And so, I think that's a whole lot more client-centered, and obviously, we want to help people to become their best selves. And if this woman really felt like that was her best self, then that would be where we would want to help her. Obviously, again, not endorsing abuse or anything like that. So let's talk about the T word, therapy. Therapy is treatment intended to relieve or heal a disorder. Treatment of mental conditions by verbal communication and interaction. Therapy helps the patient to deal with their difficult relationships. So again, if we're looking at that P word, I don't think it really comes close to matching this definition of helping people deal with their difficult relationships or situation. So what's the best therapy? The best therapy is offered before someone is in crisis or has offended. The best therapy is motivated by genuine concern for the individual you're serving. It's based in truth, and it's offered in an environment free of fear and threat. And I think some of the challenges to effective therapy are reporting laws, tough on crime laws, the prison industrial complex, and people and companies trying to make cash or to cash in on others' suffering, what I'm going to call carpetbaggers. And therapists who are unequipped to handle the needs of registrants and sexually diverse populations. Other challenges are shame, the fear of being outed, the fear of being excluded or ostracized, and not knowing where to find good therapy. And I think there are some special and underserved populations that we need to think about. Persons struggling with illegal sexual thoughts, registrants, juveniles who've committed an offense, those struggling, particularly youth with ADD, ADHD, autism, PTSD, OCD, and other conditions such as that, and minor attracted persons, which is again what Before You Act serves. And the mission of Before You Act is to help people live in truth and dignity. It was established in 2003. By a therapist and a minor attracted person. It's a minor or it's a 501c3 organization run in collaboration between mental health professionals, researchers, and people who are minor attracted. We believe that nothing should happen to us or about us if we aren't involved in those kind of decisions. And we believe that access to mental health services should not be denied due to one's attraction to minors or one's belief about those attractions. Again, it's a collaborative effort between therapists, researchers, and minor attracted people. Before You Act's mission is to promote the science-informed understanding about people in our community with an attraction to children or adolescents, and to support them living in truth and dignity. And before we add a therapist to our list, we interview each and every therapist that comes to us to make sure that they're on the same page with us in terms of our principles and perspectives of practice, our psychotherapy guide, and we also have some guidelines for people who are seeking therapy so they can kind of screen their own therapist, and those are available on the website. So what is a minor attracted person? First of all, most of us consider it a sexual orientation. In general, it's a person at least 16 years of age who is 5 years or older than a minor to whom they're sexually attracted. Although, as I pointed out, there are a growing number of miners themselves who self-identify as MAPs, and it may be an exclusive attraction or a non-exclusive interest. And again, miners themselves may be considered MAPs. So the other P word that I don't like is pedophile, because language matters, and often it's most inaccurate because there are a number of different philias that one would consider under the minor attraction label, that or even not under the minor attraction label, as most of us have some sort of philia in reality. So just it's an inaccurate word, as well as the shame and the societal negative implications around using that label. So with our signatory program for therapists for Before You Act, we do again ask them to read our principles and perspectives of treatment and our psychotherapy guide. We interview them, we ask them for a statement and their CV, and we do our own vetting of that person before we ever recommend them to anybody else. And we would not recommend a therapist to anybody that we personally would not feel comfortable seeing. This is the website. This is for therapists. We have our Join Our Therapist list, Principles and Perspectives, the Psychotherapy Guide. And then we have a monthly meeting called Dialogue on Therapy, which is attended by minor attracted people, therapists, researchers, and friends and family who are interested in discussing aspects of therapy. And that's available to pre-vetted people as well. So again, these are kind of the things that we cover in our interviewing of therapists, most of which I've already mentioned. So I'm certainly open to questions about presentation. Just briefly, again, the organization and the website contains a lot of information. We hold workshops once a year. We have the Dialogue and Therapy group. We have therapist education program that we're developing. We have the signatory list. We have a research group and colloquium. And then we have our Before QR journal that's published on a quarterly basis that reviews current studies. And then support groups for family and friends of MAPs, as well as an online peer support group. So that concludes the basic presentation. I'm open to questions.
Wow, we whizzed right through that.
I
Could you make that available so that I could, when I upload your audio file, I can make this available to the people who are watching the presentation later or listening to the presentation later?
Sure.
That would be awesome. All right, Dr. Katz.
Thank you. A great presentation. Thank you for what you're doing. It is definitely needed. So, for those of you who may not know me, I am a sex therapist, among other things. I also have a doctorate in criminal justice management, and I've interfaced a good deal with the Sex Offender Management Board in the state of Colorado, which is a fierce, oh, it's the Domestic Violence Sex Offender Management Board now. So, anyway, in any case. So, I just wanted to clarify a couple of things. First of all, if a client tells me that they are minor attracted, that is not reportable. There's no mandate to report what somebody's proclivities are. If they
That's true.
told me they put hands on somebody, that's a different story. And I make that clear to every client who comes in, who has, who may be squirrely about even calling me in the first place. I make it clear that here's the rules. If you tell me any of these things, I got to report it. And as a professional, I just made my peace with it. It's just part of what I got to do, and I will do it. The other side of it is that I also make myself available to the lawyers and, the defenders and et cetera, in case there is some problem with the law and somebody has to go to court. That has been very helpful for people, by the way. I might add that anybody who is caught in the web, shall we say, should definitely try to find somebody who's knowledgeable about this field, not just any counselor, but somebody who really knows this field, both the psychological stuff and the legal stuff. So also, you had mentioned something, and I wanted to be clear. I put it in the chat. I don't know how many people saw it, but it is not our job to change people. That is not the job of a therapist. The job of a therapist is to help somebody become who they want to be in their best lights. And I've been here before, and I've mentioned I'm a Rogerian-oriented therapist. And Carl Rogers says we cannot fix anybody. That is not our job. We may have our opinions. I keep my opinions to myself. My opinions have nothing to do with my work. You know, some of the people who I work with, I may not ever want to hang out with socially, but that has nothing to do with what I'm there for. I'm not there to make judgments. I'm not there to have opinions. I'm not there to persuade them to do anything or not do anything. And I'm speaking on behalf of people who would want to get into this field and maybe have a lot of opinions and a lot of, you know, feeling creepy about it. And if you're feeling creepy about it, don't do it. Don't go into this field. You're going to hear stuff that's going to curl your hair. Well, if you have any, but anyway, you know, I mean, I do hear stuff that's like, oh, I never heard that before. You know, believe me. Also, I work with a lot of poly people. That's another story for another time. But the other point is one of my issues I've actually done three seminars with the Sex Offender Management Board online here, you know, on the screen, just like what we're looking at now, with folks who work in Canyon City, which is the huge complex here in Colorado, where most people who've been convicted of sexual offenses are sentenced to. And these folks are not about therapy. These folks are about changing behaviors. That is not our job. Our job is not to convince somebody to change their behaviors. That's the correctional system wants to do that. Okay, that's their job. That's not our job as counselors. And unfortunately, even the best, and some of the people who work there, I know they're my colleagues, they're my cohorts, people I went to school with. And their job is to change people's behaviors. And I do not believe that is the job of a psychotherapist. Our job is to help the person become. I think you noticed in the chat, I said, as a therapist, I try to deal with the whole person, not this little piece of it that is problematic for some people. So anyway, that's mainly what I wanted to say. I wish I could have, you know, some of the slides went by fast. And will we be getting a copy of this slide? Oh, we're getting a copy of the whole show. Okay. So
Well,
some
I
of it.
mean, I don't usually mail it out. I usually just post it on the website, but I have been I've been working hard on getting all of the old ones uploaded, and so I have a an email like half written that just says, "Hey, everybody, just in case you ever miss a war room, you know, here's where all the war rooms are, and you know, you've missed a lot of good stuff." And you know, I've
Is that
gotten almost all of the ones that I've run, uploaded and ready.
Thank you. The reason I mention is because I think I may want to get involved with your organization. I'm licensed here in Colorado, and
Well, I would suggest you go to the Before You Act website and kind of review that, and then shoot an email to me because I'm the point person for getting involved in terms of being
okay.
a therapist.
And I can find your email on your site, right?
It says find a therapist or it, but it's in the presentation here. Let me just share again because this is that's the slide. That's my email for Before You Act, the first one there.
There you go.
There you go.
mharris@e4u.
All right,
Thank you so much.
there's quite a bit in the chat.
Could I just re before we do that, can I just respond to Dr. Katz's?
Absolutely.
Sure. So thank you very much for making your reporting obligation clear to your clients. I appreciate that. That's one of the things that we cover in our interviews with therapists is the need to make that very clear and not to you know, because that's probably the biggest fear of people coming to therapy is being reported. And yeah,
Sure.
well, the majority of MAPs are never going to offend, even though you say the thought of it is not reportable, and you are correct, that's still a big fear.
Well, and some people who didn't ever, like, I know of at least two people who told their therapist they had not committed a crime. They told their therapist that they were having these thoughts, and the therapist had them civilly committed.
Well, which is the other problem is trigger happy therapists who do report things that aren't necessarily reportable and trigger happy prosecutors that try and prosecute that. So, you know, it's a matter of That's why we pre-screen people so people can feel confident in the fact that the therapist, while they do have an obligation if they suspect that abuse is happening to report, and they're not going to lose their license by not doing that. It is important that you know the parameters are and are reminded of the parameters of therapy so that you can couch your comments in a way that is not going to get you locked up, and so that you can feel confident that the therapist is open and ready to deal with those situations. As you say, Dr. Katz, being well educated enough in the actual criteria and well-minded enough in the type of situations you may get into to be honest with yourself about what you can handle as a therapist, right?
Amen.
Is the facility that you are talking about, is that a civil commitment facility?
Yeah,
Canyon
civil
City?
commitment.
Oh, sorry.
Civil commitment. The ones that I've heard about were civilly committed in Illinois and Minnesota.
Yeah, I didn't
And
know
they had never
whether
committed a crime. They got
I didn't
civilly committed for just in case they someday do a thing.
Yeah, I didn't know whether the one that he was talking about was a civil commitment facility.
No, I was talking about Canyon City, which is a huge correctional complex. It's a prison. It's a giant prison, the
Okay.
biggest prison in the state of Colorado, and they have a sexual offense wing essentially. And I, like I said, I've done seminars with them
Okay.
about, you know, we don't see eye to eye on a lot of things, but I'm knowledgeable about a lot of stuff, so they've
There you
invited
go.
me here to talk with them.
Very good.
Like the loyal opposition or something like that.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. And are there other questions? I don't know.
There's a lot of questions in the chat. Okay, so the next question I see is where do I find therapy referral service somewhere in New York State, it looks like. Does Before You Act have a therapist in New York, or do you only do Indiana?
No, Before You Act is actually, we make referrals worldwide, primarily again for people who are minor attracted. We don't specifically make just for people who have committed a sex offense. It's geared specifically to people who are minor attracted. We have multiple therapists in New York. We do not publish our list for a number of reasons. We like to make the best referrals we can. We like to keep our therapists open to working with clients instead of answering emails from people that they can't serve. And so we make those referrals specifically. So the way to get a referral is to email me and
Email Michael. Okay.
tell me you're in New
So
York and
one
you
more time, tell me
email.
your email. It's Michael at
It's M here. I'll just pop it up on the
share it again.
speaker.
Yeah, perfect.
We do not openly publish those. There is another organization called ASAP International. They have a little bit different that philosophy. They are a little bit more prevention centered. They have an open list on their website for referrals to therapy, most of which has been imported from ATSA. And they do not interview people as we do before they, before they publish them on their website. They have vetted a few people in terms of just confirming that they're open to working with MAPs, but they don't do the kind of vetting that we do yet. You know, I will send people to that list if I don't have anybody in a specific state, but we prefer to send people to people that we have pre-vetted. But that list is available if somebody wants to check online for their particular state or country at ASAP International.
ASAP International.
You noticed the question in the chat that I wanted to address about therapists helping a client to understand how destructive their behavior might be. And I just want to make it very clear here once again, we are not in any way, shape, or form correcting people on their behavior. That's not what we do. That's not our role. You know, that's why I have a beef with the people who work in the correctional system, because that's what they're trying to do, is change people's behavior. I'm not here to change anybody's behavior. In my existence, I'm here to monitor my own behavior. Yes, I want to be ethical and a good person. I'm here to help people understand themselves. That's it. Yeah,
That,
you know,
that's,
and I
I
think.
assume that some people come to you saying, "Hey, I need help changing my behavior." If someone
Yes.
comes to you and says, "I would like some help changing my behavior or changing
Yes.
that," so if they say, "I need some help with this," then you are willing to help.
Well, I'm willing to help, but again, the help means helping them figure out what to do, not to tell them what to do. I
Right.
just want to be
Sure,
clear
sure,
about that. It's never my role
sure.
to tell them.
You know, and I think that's the key is that, you know, if we're really trying to help people, we let them identify their own needs and then help them figure things out by helping them ask the right questions for themselves, you know, rather than do that. And the other point that I also wanted to make, which I think Dr. Katz kind of started to make there, was that, you know, a lot of times if a person is an MAP or has committed a sex offense, they may not want to come and talk about that. That may not be the what's on their mind that's most pressing. And it may be just dealing with people rejecting them. It may be the fact that they're having trouble with their spouse. It may be the fact that they lost their job. It may be something, you know, they got a notice in the mail from the IRS or, you know, so you have to be willing to talk about what people want to talk about. You know, I mean, that's how you help people is by talking about the things that are important to them. And, you know, that may be a presenting problem that turns into something else, but, you know, that's what a good therapist does is listens to the client.
Get out to
Okay,
this.
some other questions in the chat. Next question in the chat is, how many people who became therapists were motivated by a negative sexual experience? I'm
Well,
not
I
sure
don't
if you
have a
know the
specific answer to that, but I think there are those that are. I think you also have people that are parole officers, probation officers, and in law enforcement that are motivated by those things. You know, I have a lawmaker here in Indiana who apparently something happened to his wife, and he is just dead set on passing the harshest laws he can possibly pass, you know, based on his own biases. And, you know, in order to be effective in therapy, you have to get by that. And again, echoing Dr. Katz's statement, you have to know who you actually are able to work with in a helping capacity and who you are trying to work with for self-serving motives.
Okay.
And
Earlier,
also,
when you were saying
sorry.
ATSA, were you talking about the Association for the Treatment and Prevention of Sexual Abuse? Is
Yes.
that what we were talking about? Okay. And I wonder where the P goes because there's no P in ATSA.
Prevention, I think.
But like their website is ATSA.com and they took the P out.
I'm sorry. No, not ATSA. That's the organization that I think they imported most of their list from. I'm sorry, it's ASAP here. Hang on, I'll find it and pull it up.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so let's see. Next question. Wow, so many questions. Gonna roll back ways. Okay, so Larry asks, is ATSA part of Before You Act policy?
No.
No. Okay.
You know,
I don't even.
we work with anybody that we're very much interested in working with people that want to work with us, but our goal is to let the science speak for itself and not to impose somebody's thought or norm or whatever. You know, we're not trying to be a religious movement. We're not trying to be a philosophical movement. We're not trying to be a cultural movement. We're trying to bring the best science to helping people who are minor attracted deal with their attraction in a way that lets them live in truth and dignity while not hurting other people. That makes sense? Okay.
Okay,
So
next question down.
here's the ASAP International website.
ASAP, Association
And
for
then
Sexual Abuse Prevention.
this is
ASAP
the
International.
therapist database down here where you can put in your country, your state, and it even has a city thing. But, you know, they have a much wider database than we do. But again, that's because they don't really vet people. And I'm not, you know, I have very good friends that are part of this organization. They are actually a breakoff from from NAR or from ME from Before You Act, but I just that we don't refer to their therapist simply because they don't vet the same way we do. I've actually even spoken at their conference on how we vet people, so have a good relationship with them, but their database is not the same as ours.
Okay. All right. Putting that in the chat too. All right. Scrolling back up. Someone asks, the group therapy I had to go to comply a number of restrictions and had to do a lie detector. So you were right, just trying to manage it if the courts make you go. Don't
It's
100% understand.
quite the management thing. I have a couple guys that are homeless, one of them about to be sent back to prison because he can't pay his therapy fees, and his lie detector fees and whatnot, and of course they don't couch it that way. It's because you're non-compliant with your conditions of parole, but it's still getting.
Yeah, it's somebody wants to make some money and you don't have money. And we make it hard for you to get money because everybody has a problem with hiring people on the registry. Yeah. All right. Roger asks, do you address PICS as part of treatment, post-incarceration syndrome?
I would say that's kind of the same thing as PTSD, kind of whatever. What we do is we identify therapists who are capable of working with MAPs. They are individual therapists. They work individually. Some of them have expertise in some areas. Some of them have expertise in other area. We do not vet them specifically for an expertise in a certain area. We vet them because they're willing
Yeah,
and
are they going to
capable.
be are they going to be decent? Are they going to believe in the humanity of people who are minor attracted?
So, part of what we do is if you say you're looking for a specific type of therapy, if we can, we will match you up with somebody that does that. But I get requests all the time from people that want a specific kind of therapy or even want a specific kind of diagnosis. And my general response is, what good is that specific diagnosis going to do you particularly? I mean, most diagnoses are to help, identify for insurance purposes and not really a part of therapy. Therapy is working in your situation with a therapist, not putting a label on you. So, we try not to do that. And are certain therapists who are qualified in certain areas good for certain people? Yes, but I would say find a therapist who's willing to work with an MAP and see how far you get with that. If you need something on top of that, then look for that specific thing. But to try and find people that are good with MAPs and have all kinds of specific designations is a task and what we're able to do at this point.
Well, I totally get it. You can't sort by all the things. So you're going to sort by your primary, you're going to sort by your primary issue, which is, are you going to turn me in? Are you going to have such hateful ideas about me that you're not going to be a good therapist? Totally
Exactly.
get that. All right.
Can I dovetail on what
Yes.
Michael just said? And I think I did a presentation here some months back about this. The rest of the world, okay, uses the ICD-11. We use the DSM-5, DR. Those are the book of diagnoses. So that's what's required for getting insurance payments and et cetera, et cetera. The rest of the world has compulsive sexual behavior disorder as a diagnosis, as well it should. Because it is a diagnosis. The United States does not. We do not have such a diagnosis. There's no
What was the
such
name of the
thing.
diagnosis again?
Compulsive sexual behavior disorder. And you can imagine, what an umbrella that is of all kinds of different behaviors. And that, has all kinds of implications, not just insurance. That's high on the list because insurance here will not pay for such a diagnosis. It doesn't exist. But what about law enforcement? What about corrections? What about the court systems? If we had such a diagnosis, things would change. I'm not saying everything's going to change. We have 40 years worth of special victims units on TV drumming stuff into people's heads, literally with their drums. But and the reason I'm bringing this up now, and I brought it up before, is that if anybody here has the ear of any politician, governmental person, tell them about this. That this the rest of the world knows that this is a real thing. Here in the US and the DSM, we have things called paraphilias. And Pat, even the word is dripping with judgment, and just and it's way in the back of the book. There's not any specific paraphilic disorders. It's not the same thing as compulsive sexual behavior disorder. So I want to put that on the table just for everybody's understanding. And Michael, maybe you have some ideas about this.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, obviously the best prevention or the best approach to therapy, as I mentioned earlier, is providing it to people pre-offense or before crisis happens. And, I think if we would do some things like, although I don't agree with like the program in Germany, it's not coming to me now, the name of it, but Dunkelfeld, the Dunkelfeld Project. I don't necessarily agree with everything in that. At least there are governments that are offering kind of a more of an anonymous treatment option, or at least a pre-treatment option to people getting in trouble. And I think, the whole diagnostic thing, the whole how we identify people, all of that, plays into looking at what real solutions are instead of trying to put a band-aid on things well after the fact.
Totally get that. Okay, next question I see. Beverly asks, does before you act have any something in, do you have any way to help family members trying to understand their minor attracted loved one?
Yeah, I kind of flew through that, but yes, what we have right now as an organization is simply a email chain for friends and family of people who are minor attracted. But if you email me, and it's a good group, and a lot of people have found a lot of help from it, so I'm not trying to downplay that. But I also worked with a therapist recently to create a actually live online group for people struggling as family members. And so that is available. I'm not sure how many people he can take at a time in that, but it is now available as a live interactive group.
Oh, nice. Okay,
It's email
someone could email you and you could see if there's space in that group.
Well, just email me, and what I do is I refer you to the actual person
Yep.
providing the services, and you can work with
Yep.
them. And
Okay, and then
it is a free group.
nice. Okay, then Jim asks, just wondering if they help people understand why they feel this way in those attractions. And my answer to that, or my comment about that is, were any of you on when Gerald Blanchard was on the War Room? Gerald Blanchard, can't remember, I think he's in Des Moines. Anyway, he's a therapist, and he came on the War Room some months ago, and he the first chunk of it was all about like helping people have empathy for people who had touched a child. Just basically like reading some comments that various people, sort of similar to the ones that you had at the beginning of your presentation, just comments that the people themselves had made. And I thought he did a really excellent job of just like explaining what that must be like. If you know you're attracted to minors, your whole life, everywhere you go, you probably feel like everybody hates you, and that cannot be a good feeling. Right, that can't be a feeling that helps you do better with your life to know that. And then
Well,
somewhere in there, he talked about that. I'm not going to do a very good job on this, I'm sure, but he talked about the fact that often the people he was talking to, usually in prisons, said that they were themselves the victims of that kind of touch as children, as young people, and that sometimes he kind of refra like he framed it like that they just sort of get frozen in the state they were in when something happened to them. They sort of get frozen in that state, and they then that's who they connect with. They connect with people who are the age that they were when that happened to them.
I
And
think that,
I wonder if either of you have any comments about that. Have you
yeah.
seen any truth to that?
I'll make a comment, then I think you have an audience member that wants to talk as well.
Hand up. Hang on.
I many of us have come to identify their MAP-ness, as you will, as an orientation. And whether that's a birth orientation or whether that's an orientation caused by, kind of happenings in your youth or whatever, that's up for debate. But I think you almost have to come to a point where you say, okay, this is where I am. This is, what I feel. And then you can, with a therapist, work through how some of those feelings may have developed. But I think you're kind of fooling yourself a little bit. It's like, why am I male? Why am I female? Why am I gay? Whatever. Sometimes there just aren't really good answers to those questions, but
Yeah, I'm not saying that you
that's what
have
the
to have an
therapist
answer.
needs. No, but I think your question was
It I
asking.
felt for me, it helped me. It just helped again with empathy,
Yeah,
right? It helped
right.
me like, oh, well, if this is a thing that happens to some people, that they themselves have a thing that happens to them when they're a teenager, and then that sort of sets something in their brain that makes them attracted to teenagers, that helps me feel more. I'm just looking for things that would help people
Right.
believe in people's humanity and like give people some like, oh, okay, well now I can understand it a little better if that's a real thing that really happens,
Well,
you know.
honestly, there are some statistics that almost all males have some attraction to teenage,
Yes, I personally believe that everyone's attracted to teenagers because we started out as teenagers,
So,
right?
what, but part of the therapeutic process is working through all those feelings and, trying to come to some understanding about yourself and why you are who you are. I mean, that's the real search for life, right? Trying to figure out who you are and why, what motivates you to do certain things and how you can move from that to wherever you want to be. I mean, obviously, these feelings as an orientation may never go away, but they certainly are something that you don't have to act on if you don't.
Yes. And I think for anyone to deny that post-pubescent teenagers are attractive is just they're just lying because post-pubescent teenagers that's what they're like their bodies are designed for attractiveness and the idea that somehow I mean it's as old as time like a bunch of men like watching the cheerleaders practice on the field. Of course they're attractive. They're teenagers. They're just so I think deny that doesn't mean that you should go try to have a date with them because that's illegal and you're too old. But the idea that somehow as soon as you turn 20, you're no longer attracted to people who are 18 or 17, it's just dumb. That's just not the way brains work.
Think Ronnie had a comment or a question.
And somebody you said somebody had their hand up? I
Ronnie,
can't
Ronnie A.
Ronnie. Okay, hang on. Ronnie, Ronnie,
He's on
Ronnie.
the screen.
Unmute. All right, Ronnie, you're unmuted.
Great, thank you. First, I would like to say, Anne, yes, you were right in a lot of things of what you said about the empathy. People who have been abused, and I see a comment there that it's classic PTSD, and it is. For me, in my case, I'm going to use myself as an example. That way, I keep everything up to me. I was abused sexually at the age of 8, and I didn't say a word about it because in the 70s we were taught we keep our family problems to ourselves, and I was also coerced with fear of being punished for something else. So if I didn't comply, then I would be told on for doing something else. And I know that what happened to me was wrong, okay? And I grew up and I understood what happened was wrong, but I still kept quiet, didn't say a word, but I made a vow to myself not to do that to anyone. Well, I lied to myself. I said I was okay, that there was nothing wrong with me, and that's not true. There was a lot wrong with me. So I had created a victim of the same age. I had reached a point of stress in my life, and even though I knew that it was wrong, up here, I was so stressed out with everything that was going on with the rest of life that I used that as an escape. Okay. And it's kind of it's a lot like masturbation. Growing up, we're told, don't touch it, leave it alone, don't do that. That's dirty, that's nasty. So we don't do that as far as everybody knows. But yet, everybody did it.
First.
So it's like one of those
understood, not mentioned things that we do. And so having taken that away from my traumatic experience is what allowed me to commit my offense. Not the fact that I was abused myself, but what I had taken away from that experience, because I grew up and I knew what happened was wrong. So now I have been very, very fortunate. I have not gone through near as much trouble as what many others have gone through from what I've been hearing. I have a new start in a new area, and I'm not to get religious, but I do have a relationship with God, and he's been with me the whole time. I can see that. But I also want to give back, and I have a concept, and I'm going to share it with Michael. I got his email address. I'm going to share it with him. And it's to start a program kind of like Before You Act up here in Oakland County. We have a Michigan Citizens for Justice over in the next county over in Washtenaw County, but nothing here in Oakland County. And it's to help people who come out and want to reintegrate into society. And it's also to, if possible, reach out to the people who have been abused to talk out, get some help. I tried prior to my crime, I tried to get help, but I went to a psychiatrist. I didn't know any better. Psychiatrist was not going to help me. I should have gone to a psychologist, but I didn't know. Okay, is that my fault? No, not really, but I was looking for help and I didn't feel like I got it. So I just kind of gave up on the world and just stuck to myself. So yeah, and I would say that you were right in a lot of what you said, and I hope that sheds some light on what all's going on here.
Yeah, and
And
there are.
honestly, the fact that we don't allow people, we don't encourage people to talk about things that happened to them when they're kids. We don't encourage people to, openly communicate about this kind of thing means that people are not getting help, right? They're not getting help. And when you don't get help, you don't get better. And furthermore, oh, the other thing that I want to refer to is Restorative Action Alliance had this really excellent webinar one time. It was all about her name is Elizabeth something. It was all about these Native American circles. And one of the things that she said, Elizabeth Clements was her name. One of the things she said was that often when we are abused as children, the way our brains like manage that is they just sort of stuff it down. And they just, your brain just trains you to like, oh, don't think about that. Don't think about that. Just stuff it down, stuff it down. And that's supported by the fact that our family doesn't want to talk about it. And nobody really wants to talk about it. Well, guess what happens? If you stuff down abuse that occurred to you when you were a child, then when you're an adult and you see the shadows, you start to see the hints of someone grooming a child, your brain does the same exact thing it did when you were a child. It stuffs it down. So instead of being a great bystander who says, "Why do you leave that door open, Dad, or why don't you leave that door open, brother?" Instead of, doing a good job of like keeping your eyes open for what happened to you, you stuff it down. Your brain just stuffs it right down, and you just don't even see it. So, we are just not helping anyone when we refuse to talk about things. All right, Morley has a question, and I'm really glad to hear that.
Want to respond to Ronnie real quick and say one other thing here. So yeah, Ronnie, be happy to talk to you. You do have some great people in Michigan though that are doing some wonderful things that you could probably tie into as well, including my friend Kathy and John, friends Kathy and John there
That I've
in
talked with them
Michigan.
already.
Yep, they're a good resource, but I'm happy to talk to you about how we can help as well. One thing that I find is that we do have a lot of people coming to us who are afraid that they might be an MAP, and that's a big fear too, is that they want to be reassured that they're not in some ways or whatever. There's just a number of fear motivates in weird ways, and we really have to be careful and let people know that there's some place open that they can talk. I also noticed that my friend Wayne Had a question up there and was asking how many therapists we have. And I'll just answer this way, Wayne, not nearly enough. Not nearly enough. We get calls from people all over the world. We haven't, we I've been able to send people to some place, but we certainly don't have a large number of people in every state. We would love to do that, but there are many states that we don't. We're grateful for the interstate compacts that exist out there that allow certain therapists to work in multiple states, but most are pretty well limited to one or two states. And, and then we have an increasing number of international clients coming on. So we're always looking for good therapists. I don't put out the exact number we have, but it's not nearly enough. Just say it that way.
Yeah, I had a comment if I can get in there.
I'm early.
Yeah, hi. One of the major factors that I don't know about other people, but I can't afford $200 an hour. I can't afford $100 an hour, and I need to be seen at least 3 times a week. So I don't know what kind of fees. Nobody's ever mentioned money so far. In this last hour, I haven't heard anybody say anything about what they charge. In my case, I did have some income, but my God, I couldn't do that. I was so far gone. I was in therapy once or twice a week, and I had to stop for lack of funds. And what I needed to be in a residential treatment program because outpatient was not going to help me. I was in too much pain and too much denial. So I have researched about 3 months ago the existing facilities in the United States. And the one I found was $30,000 up front for a month. The other
Per
one,
month,
a month.
so $1,000 a day.
Yeah, and that's just probably not that much compared to the other program, which was over $100,000 for a year. Now, I went to prison, and I'm glad I did because I was so sick that nothing else would help me. And I went into the prison 5-year program, and I'll tell you what, it opened my eyes. It was the greatest therapy I've ever had. It was harsh. We met 5 days a week in group for sometime 2 or 3 hours at a time, and there was no holds barred. There was no, gee, who do you want to be? It was, you're a sick motherfucker. You raped a kid. Now let's talk about that. And that's what we needed. Now, I don't know about minor attracted people who have not acted out. That's a whole different, absolutely different. But for those of us that offended, we need confrontation. We're narcissistic, we're sociopaths, we're really sick with post-traumatic stress. I was raped continuously as a little boy, and I don't need to justify what I did because I can't. But I couldn't get help on the street, and I can't get help now for aftercare if I want it, because I can't pay these outrageous fees for 40 minutes. So, plus, I don't trust any of them out there anyway, because if all I have to say is I have offended, and they're on a phone. So I'm on the registry, and I'm doing pretty good out here. And I do carry the same shame and fear. What if they find out about me? Will I lose my friends? Will people start making phone calls? I was already kicked out of a group of people that I was in for writing. We were helping each other write. I write and publish. I'm a good writer. Well, I was in this little writing group, and they found out that 30 years ago, 30 years ago, I touched a child. Oh my God, we don't want you in our group. What does that have to do with writing? So now I'm banned from there. And this is it. This is it. So where do people go for help that they can afford? That's the question. There's nothing out there except those two places in the United States. And one of them said, if you've offended, we won't take you. So 100 grand won't get you help. And I think we need to do something about this. I don't
Man,
know.
wouldn't it be nice if we took all the money we waste on all the other nonsense and used it for actually giving people the help that they need?
And all the money we raced with parole and probation and registers and everything else, open up some places where we can go get real help. Let the court assign that. Instead of 7 or 8 years in prison, you are going to go get help in this facility. Now, that's for those that offended. For those that haven't,
they may need a different approach like this before you act. You know, holding hands,
Well,
helping become authentic is great. But how much do your people charge, Mr. Harris?
okay, so first of all, they are our people and they aren't our people. They are independent contractors. We don't make a penny off of referring anybody to anybody. We screen people. They're independent contractors, they're independent business people, and they set their own prices. So we don't set their prices, and they're generally in line with prices of other therapy in that particular area. I do agree that it's a problem for people that can't afford therapy. I don't agree that identifying ourselves as sick motherfuckers is exactly the approach that I would take to identifying myself or to encouraging people to identify themselves. I think that's part of the problem. When you start identifying with a negative label, you're going to be negative yourself.
Well, I put my hands on a child. What do you call that? Okay. That's sick.
I call it
If you
some.
think you're sick, then there's something sick about you. It's
Well,
sick.
again, calling people names and
And
setting
you can
labels.
talk to the child that I touched and ask her how she took it to this day. She's still having problems.
You're
What
certainly
we do is harmful.
entitled to your own opinion. You're certainly entitled to identify yourself the way that you would wish to be identified. I don't think it's healthy for other people. I don't think it's healthy for me. I'm not going to buy into that label.
Well, if you touched a child, you were sick. What else would you call it? Gee, I did something wonderful. I put my hands on a
I'm not
child.
going to have this debate with you right now,
You
sir.
should have a debate with it.
If you want to talk to me
Because I want you to
privately,
take responsibility for your behavior.
well, you take responsibility for yours,
I
I'll take
do.
responsibility for mine,
Okay,
and
do you?
we'll do our thing.
What did
I'm
you
not
do then? What
going to
did
have
you
this debate.
do?
I'm not going to have this debate with you
I'm
right now, sir.
holding you accountable for your
Well,
behavior.
that's not
Morley,
you're I
this
am
is
not doing
not
this.
the way we would want to treat any, like, the whole
We're
point
not
of
doing
this is
this.
we don't
Yeah, but
want to treat
he's
people.
soft soaping this.
We don't want to treat people this way because shame gets us
It's
nowhere.
not shame, it's accountable. What I
Well,
did was bad.
I have 20, 25 years of accountability, sir, that I've not touched a child. So I'm not going to identify with past.
Good. I had 30 years.
I'm not going to
We're
identify
both
with
in
past. I'm
recovery.
not going to identify with past behavior. I'm going to move on from where I was. And that's
Good.
what I encourage other people to do.
I was talking about the past. In
But to
the past,
answer
I
it,
was sick. I did
let
a
me,
six.
that's fine. Again, you can identify with that yourself. But to answer your question about what people do who can't afford it, that is a big problem. All services aren't free. People need to make livings. I do think our country needs to do things to provide services for other people. What we've tried to do for people that can't afford help is that we've created a mentoring program for people who have been there, done that, and have moved on. So we have that. And then we have an online peer support group where people can get support from their peers in working through issues. But again, it's a problem that needs to be addressed. And a growing number of minors that are minor attracted is also a problem because finding services for minors is often more difficult than finding services for adults. So I'll leave it at that.
So, I don't understand why you would, if you're a minor, being attracted to minors doesn't make you a weirdo. If you're a minor, like, every teenager is attracted to teenagers.
Well, but if we're talking a 14-year-old that's attracted to a 5-year-old, then that's
Sure,
problematic, right?
okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I see what you're saying. All right, we're getting a lot of messages in the thing about give yourself some grace. Do not live in the past. Forgive yourself. Know that you're not perfect. We all make mistakes. David, you are unmuted.
Hi,
Hi.
everyone. First of all, thank you all for being here tonight. This is an incredible information sharing session that I, for one, am very appreciative of. So once again, thanks. I have, through my limited research, have come across a couple of references to, I guess it's more like a general philosophy of what we're doing here kind of thing in comparison to Europe.
Mm.
What types of differences do you see in, say, the goals of therapy or the availability of therapy? Like Morley pointed out, the affordability of therapy, United States versus Europe, and pick a part of Europe, whatever. It seems to me that America has a lot of learning to do, and I was just wondering what were your experiences with that?
Yeah. Well, I still get requests for therapy from people around the world. So,
Really?
yeah. In many different countries, I mean, I've had requests from Russia, I've had requests from Japan, I've had many requests from Australia, New Zealand, the United Kingdom, continental Europe. I almost think in some respects it doesn't matter where you are in the world. If you have this problem, there's enough of Western influence, either that or a cultural thought about this type of behavior that is predominant throughout the world. I do think some cultures, some countries certainly provide more universal health care than the United States does. I mentioned the Germany program, the Dunkelfeld program that does prevent or does
Wait,
present an opportunity.
what is the name of the German one? I was meaning to look that up.
It's called
Dunkel,
Dunkelfeld.
Dunkelfeld,
And don't ask me to spell it, but I can look it up here in a minute.
Dunkelfeld Project. Okay, hang on. I see a
Yeah,
Dunkelfeld
that's it. Yeah.
Prevention Project Dunkelfeld.
So there are some efforts from other countries that are good, but whenever the state controls the services that are available to you, the state controls a lot. So it's still governmental influence is still guided by governmental principles wherever you are. But I do think there, it's almost like the problem with international travel under the International Magans law, right? You have some countries that kind of thumb their nose at the United States and say, "What the heck?" and we'll let you into the country. You have other countries that have kind of followed suit and won't let registrants into those countries. So, and just finding therapists that are actually oriented enough in this particular, it's pretty well a new science, at least in our ability to understand it. So, the best answer I can give you is that there are progressive programs, but they are mostly governmental programs. And
So it sounds like everyone's learning at the same time, then, is
I
what
think
I'm
so.
hearing from you.
There are a couple, my caution, I guess, is there are a couple people that have presented themselves now in this field as experts. Seem to be making a lot of money from the cause as people who are dealing in sex offender therapy. So just be cautious where you're going and do your own screening if there's not somebody like me in between screening. And even so, you're probably going to want to screen for your own needs as well. So,
Well,
but
yeah,
anyway.
actually, that to me, that was the most valuable portion of this whole session. I've had incredibly bad experiences with would-be therapists. Some pretty unethical things were done to me or said to me. In my opinion, it just defeats the whole purpose. It's just really, really disappointing. That's why I asked the question about, do you screen for abuse in the past of a potential therapist, because to me, that might seem a bit invasive or intrusive. However, to me, it's a good, important piece of information because it would illustrate some sort of bias.
And are you thinking that they would be worse, they would be less effective therapists if they had abused themselves in their past?
Well, there I have come across therapists that have a tremendous problem with people who have committed sex offenses.
Sure.
And I don't know what their own personal story was. I wasn't privy to that information, nor did I seek it out. However, I can empathize with that. So
Well,
to me, but again, to me, it's an important piece of information.
yeah. So what we do, and I won't tell you that we screen specifically for that, but What we do is we ask them to submit their resume, as I said, their CV, and we ask them to review our principles and perspectives of therapy and our therapeutic guide, and then to submit a statement about how that matches up with their therapeutic practices, and we outline, kind of what we expect from a therapist and from therapy, and then we spend an hour talking to these people, and both Richard and I are MAPs ourselves. And so, we get a pretty good feel for those people. We ask them about specifically, how they would work with MAPs, what their, approach would be. Richard is very well versed in different kinds of therapy, and we have a conversation about that, about their attitude, asking them if there's anybody they wouldn't feel comfortable working with. Just have a general conversation, and we've got a pretty good sense of, how, and not that somebody couldn't probably fool us potentially. We did have a therapist that we chose not to continue to refer people to, but we hadn't really referred too many people to him. We just saw some of his comments outside that, we didn't feel comfortable with. We do review their websites and other material about them before we add them. So I guess all I can tell you is that any of our therapists, I would not feel uncomfortable seeing myself and talking about my,
Thank you.
and that's the criteria that we use basically, is our own feel good feeling about that therapist, and any
Hey,
reviews and any reviews that you can send
intuition
after
goes a
using.
long way sometimes. That's good. Thank you very much for your comments. I appreciate your work,
Thank
everyone.
you.
Really, very much. It's very important.
Ron, is that a hand up? Whoops, hang on.
Okay.
I think I unmuted you while you were unmuting yourself and then.
I was unmuted the whole time. I just didn't talk
Oh,
out of respect. So,
sorry. Yes.
but I would like to let David know that there are many different types of therapy. And again, I've been very blessed in everything. I have conducted some wet therapy, which is written. Examine or written exposure therapy. And then there's also what I'm doing now is EMDR. Can't remember what EMDR
Yeah, it's the
stands for, but yeah.
tapping.
Yeah, the
Yeah.
tapping
Well,
or different
it's
things. Yeah.
rapid eye movement or eye movement therapy.
Yeah. Eye movement disconnection or something. Anyway, so look into the different types of therapy and see which one might fit you better and might help you better. Is what I would suggest to do.
There are a lot of different approaches, and not everything works good for everybody. I work with a therapist who's primarily centered on the traditional talk therapy, but that seems to be working for me. But there is the EMRD. There's also a person who used to be one of our therapists and is not currently, simply because she stopped seeing individual clients, but who I have a lot of respect for, does the chemical therapy, where they actually inject you with psychotropics that help you trip out. But they do some major preparation prior to that, and then go over certain things that you said in the process of tripping. That is all done. I mean, the only legal way to do that in the United States right now is through a kind of a study-based therapy, but it is available. So, point being that you're right, there are a lot of different things, and not everything works for everybody, and you kind of have to figure out what's going to work for you.
Don't give up on, if you try one, don't give up if it doesn't work. You got to try something else,
I mean, the point of our group again is simply to route people to people that, are willing to work with MAPs. If you're looking for a specific type of therapy, then certainly tell me that, but I wouldn't wholeheartedly reject somebody that doesn't have that specific qualification either before you talk with them. Most therapists will talk with you, do an initial half hour or 20 minutes with you before charging you for anything, to kind of just to get acquainted meeting. So most therapists.
That presentation by Gerald Blanchard that I referred to earlier in the chat, that was a he talked about psychedelic therapy in his war room talk, and the combat, he talked about three things. He helped us have empathy for people who were minor attracted. He talked about psychedelic therapy and how they use psychedelic therapy to help people. And then he talked about Native American circles and how the Native American community does a better job of like treating people well after they get out and helping them reintegrate into society. And basically just, they talk about it in their circle, and then everyone is expected to treat that person with dignity,
Yeah,
which
and
is
I
the
think
opposite of what we do here.
I think the Canadian model of circles of support, the COSA program, is similarly based in that type of thing. So the Canadians are doing some good things in that direction as well. I did want to mention real quick before I forget, there is an organization here in Indiana that I'm familiar with that's called Inspiration Ministries, and they are an in-house program. I don't think they charge near they do charge a fee, but they also have people working, that are employed within the community while they're involved in the in-house program. And it was started by two registrants, so they do accept registered individuals. It's mostly a substance abuse-based program, but there are some other programs out in the community that do serve people in kind of a more in-house capacity that may not charge the $30,000 a month that was talked about earlier.
Right, David has a question.
Yeah, just real quick, let's pretend for a moment that I had the resources and proper motivation and self-confidence to get myself a psychology degree in these related fields, specifically tailored for these types of problems with people. Would you or could you recommend any university or any program in particular that would be better than most for that purpose? Sounds like
Well,
no. That's okay.
not well, there are some people that are
Is
doing some
anybody good at it yet? Is my question, I guess.
people that think they're good at it.
Right?
We have, a couple of our therapists. There's a researcher that works at the University of Delaware named Chrysanthi Leone. I think she teaches, so they may have a good program. I don't know. You'd have to check into it. John Hopkins does some good research. Jill Levinson, I think she teaches as well. I guess the best thing that I would recommend to you if you want to get involved in something like that is come to one of our conferences and meet some people and find out, what's available in terms of education. Shoot me an email. I can probably hook you up with some people that might have some idea about where to go. The other thing that will educate you well is jumping on the dialogue on therapy calls that we have each month. That's kind of an education in and of itself. Read the journal that we publish
Is
on
there a
studies.
link for that on your website?
Yep, dialogue on therapy link. I think it's under for therapists, but it's for MAPs and family friends, researchers as well. You just have to kind of be vetted before you're allowed the link to the program. So as you do to come to the conferences, because as we saw, there are people out there that are not very friendly with the NARSOL conference.
Yeah, thank you, Proud Boys. Welcome to the big
So
time.
anyway, but yeah, I would just get around people and see what they recommend. Meet them. I'll see what I can find out for you. Just drop me an email.
Thank you
Remind
very
me.
much.
Yep.
Right, we got one kind of long Beverly comment. Beverly, you want to say it out loud, or do you want me to just read it?
Is that the one that I just wrote?
Yes. Yeah, it's a pretty long, because I think we've read most of the comments.
Okay. Well, I wrote it to Morley. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yes. But it's in the
Okay.
big chat, right?
Okay. All right. So, and this is about the intense program that he was talking about. He seemed to feel that it really met what he needed to have. And I said to him, For me, the question is, what do you do with people who are so socially manipulative and predatory? It may be an intense program like that, but not everyone would benefit from that in prison. They may be able to get away with it because prison is a place where they can get away with that level of intensity, but there may be people who are harmed by a program that tells people that they are shit people. To me, that's going overboard for a group of people when this type of therapy needs to be on a person-by-person basis with therapy that meets their needs. I know that that is pie in the sky idea of having such personal therapy, but that's what we need to strive toward. If they are willing to spend money on an intense program that harms some, then they can spend money on a program that is not a one size fits some. So
Well,
that's my that was my opinion.
and that's, that's the problem with most every law, most every whatever, is we want to take the easy way out and do the one size fits all, band-aid approach, and not tailor things to individuals. Same thing that happens when you have a mandatory sentencing. It's a one size fits all based on a specific crime that may or may not be helpful to actually helping people heal, and the victims included, the problem with most of the in-house programs is that they're basically conversion therapy, which is something that we certainly do not endorse. And I think Dr. Katz spoke to that too. I mean, trying to convert somebody to your idea of what their behavior should be is not necessarily a healthy approach, first of all, because most people are going to end up doing what they want to do anyway down the road. So unless they're the ones that are dictating the approach to their therapy, it's probably not going to be effective anyway. So, but I agree with you. We need to find ways to convince legislators and others that the one size fits all approach is not the way to even get what they want or purport to get what they want, which is prevention. If they really want to prevent something, they need to take steps ahead of time to help people to find the type of help that they need and to individualize that. So appreciate your comment.
Okay, I want to tell everybody how to save the chat because there's a lot of stuff in that chat. There's a lot of links to a lot of places and a lot of information. So go into the chat, click on the three dots where it says more, and then you say save chat. And then for me, when I shut down this meeting, it just sort of pops up in a little box, meeting save chat. So you can have that for later if you want to look stuff up or click on any of the things. If you want to have Michael's email, if you feel, if you write that down and lose it. So anyway, I really appreciate everyone coming. Next month, so I don't remember exactly who's like next, but soon I have a lady coming on who was abused as a child, it was a whole family of abuse. As she was growing up, she started noticing in herself. She started noticing that she was like, ooh, I would know how to groom that child, and I would know how to groom that child. She started becoming the monster that she didn't want to become. So she started on a whole like journey. She's psychedelics, and she and now she's on a mission to basically help people avoid that themselves. So anyway, I'm super looking forward to talking to Cynthia. That's I think can't remember if that's 2 weeks from now or 4 weeks from now. But just keep your eyes posted for that one because I know that's going to be a good one. Oh, they're all good ones.
I do have one more thing to share real quick if I can. So, last month, I think you had Matt on from Metamora Films, and he was talking about some projects that he's working on. I think some people got him and I confused because I'm a filmmaker as well, and he's collecting people's stories I am not the one collecting those stories. I have gotten several emails from people who wanted to share their story with me, which is great. I'm glad people
Are
are
you
wanting
forwarding them
to.
on?
I am forwarding on, and
Nice.
to him, or at least I'm letting them know where they need to write to him to get that done. I am, however, working on a film myself. It's a narrative film, so it's a story film. I'm looking for people who have been affected that are actors and crew members, and would love to have any or would like to learn about being an actor or a crew member who might want to be part of the project because it is on a shoestring budget. So if you know anybody who's been personally affected or sympathetic to our cause, let them know about the film and have them get in touch with me, because we'd love to have people that actually have a heart for what we're doing involved in the film rather than just hiring people that have the skills but don't have the heart for what we're
All right. Ooh, it looks like
doing.
you got a volunteer already, David. So make sure everybody who would like to get in touch with Michael has his info. All right. I love you all. I'm always happy to talk to you. I hope to see maybe a few of you at the NARSL conference next month. So if you haven't scheduled that, I hope to see some of you in person there.
We'll
And
be there.
I'll see y'all in 2 weeks. Thank you for coming and thank you, Michael, for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you guys. Have a good one.
Cute dog.
Thank you for the
Thank you.
invitation. Thanks, Anne. Bye bye.
Bye.